Hi guys, welcome to the Skype show, episode one. We hope you had a good new year. My name is Mark, and we have Corey with ourselves, and we also have Anthony Carrigal, who's the Skype for Business MVP. The reason why we're setting up this show today, and for this year, in fact, is to give something back to the Skype for Business community, since we've basically relied on them on you guys for the last God knows how long. And really, it's just our way of saying thank you and trying to enrich the community. So the format of the show is broken down into three main sessions. There are two presenter-led sessions and a special guest session in the middle. Without you guys submitting topics to us, telling us what you want to talk about, we wouldn't exist. So we actively encourage you to talk to us via instant message, Yammer, or via our website, theskypeshow.com. You can click on submit a topic link and tell us what you want us to talk about. On tonight's show, session one, we have Cloud PBX and its use cases, and this will be presented by Corey. Session two, we have Edge Media, and that will be presented by Anthony Carrigal. And session three, Adoption Strategies, which will be presented by myself. After session three, we have a Q&A session. You can talk to us via Yammer, so on the Skype broadcast meeting to the right of your screen, you should see a sign into Yammer app. If you're having trouble signing into that app or you haven't joined our Yammer network, then you can instant message us either at mark@theskypeshow.com or corey@theskypeshow.com or email us or look us up on Twitter at using our handles at Unified Vale for myself and at corey_mcsc for Corey. With that in mind, I'm going to pass you over to Corey now, who's going to present session one.
So good morning, good afternoon, good evening, guys. From wherever you're joining us, thank you for taking the time, your evenings to join us or your days to join us today. So hopefully you, as Mark said, we've taken a lot from the community. So hopefully we give you guys back some useful information, especially considering the Christmas break and the festive breaks. Maybe some of you guys are a little bit rusty, especially with some of the new functionality that's been announced. So hopefully, we're hoping that this session and the following sessions are really useful and that you take some good content from it. So thanks for joining us on our first episode. So I'm here today to talk about Cloud PBX and what Microsoft have done is, so with Cloud PBX, on December the 1st, Microsoft have made the announcement that E5, the Enterprise 5 suite, was coming to play as a separate SKU that's purchasable for enterprise customers to begin with. And as part of E5, Microsoft also announced the fact that they are going to be releasing their Cloud PBX service to the public. Now, initially, it was a very lockdown preview program, so it was limited to US states only, but we're starting to see some of this kind of preview functionality come out and be released in much more GA across the globe. So it is enterprise voice functionality built into Skype for Business Online. So just as a bit of a background as to what's brought us up to this stage, in the past, we have only been able to deliver enterprise voice functionality by delivering the on-premise version of Skype for Business, which is known as Skype for Business Server, and in the past, formerly known as Link and Office Communication Server. As I said, December the 1st launch, we released E5, which brought the Cloud PBX functionality, which, as Microsoft are becoming a cloud-first company, cloud-first software release, agile release company, they're actually bringing that enterprise voice functionality into their Cloud PBX Skype for Business online service. So it's going to be delivered in two formats. You're going to be delivered through the Cloud PBX with PSTN calling. And then secondly, as an alternative method, we're also going to be able to use Cloud PBX with on-premise PSTN connectivity. And we'll delve into a bit more detail about what those two offerings mean to you. So from an advantage perspective, the cloud first only option, it's an easy to turn on, easy to turn off service that can be spun up. So whether organizations have made significant investments into on-premise PBX functionality as it stands, Office 365 essentially allows you to search the portal, obtain a number and spin that number up, assign it to a user and deliver Cloud PBX functionality from that perspective there. It's essentially, as it says on the slide, a telephone system in a box. So there's no capital expenditure required up front, assuming that you've got the appropriate infrastructure in place at the moment, so things like Active Directory Federation services, single sign-on services. It's accessible from any device, anywhere, at any time, subject to some currently supported mobile platforms by Skype for Business. And it, as it says, it increases that productivity and contributes significantly to that agile working initiative. So rather than being tied down to a location, tied down to a phone, we're leveraging the kind of enterprise voice functionality that we've seen through the on-premise functionality, but we're now also delivering that in the OpEx kind of in an OpEx manner. Similar to that, so that was the cloud PBX with PSTN calling. So it's a cloud only service and there is no dependency upon your on-premise infrastructure with exceptions such as single sign-on. Now the hybrid voice functionality is a service that we previously visited, and it was actually called hybrid voice. So essentially it is a case of homing users in the cloud but delivering their enterprise voice functionality using an on-premise service. Now this has been reintroduced back into the estate because Microsoft understand that not everybody is going to be supported on the cloud PBX service, so there are some countries that aren't eligible for it, so this will be a perfect scenario for you to adopt as kind of hybrid voice type functionality. Microsoft doesn't deliver PSTN connectivity to every country, so there are some systems that you will need to actually deploy on-premise for. And then the level of coexistence, so for us the primary functionality, the primary go-to method for the on-premise connectivity is to actually leverage your existing investments. So you may have a beneficial carrier relationship, so for example free calls or cheaper calls for long distance, national and even local calls, free calls, etc. So your carrier relationship might be beneficial, but then second and again what mostly may be more important to some customers is the fact that your contact centers and any ancillary components that are currently residing on-premise will actually need to leverage the on-premise infrastructure. So the PSTN only cloud-based only service will not allow integration with any on-premise infrastructure. So if you do have any current contact center functionality or any kind of integration with analog ports, FXS, FXO, any FXS trunking, session border controllers, existing PBX environments, then hybrid voice or the cloud PBX with on-premise PSTN connectivity is the way to go for you. So from a dial plan perspective, these are all created by Microsoft. And if you open up a remote PowerShell session to your Office 365 tenant that's been cloud PBX enabled, you can actually run the GetCS dial plan. And you'll see that there are international and national dial plans. So for now, it is limited to the US and some of the US dial plans and calling features, etc. But as we start to slowly roll these services out to the globe, we'll start to introduce more localized or dial plans for a specific location for where you are located. Extensions are normalized from Active Directory. So you can see on the slide there, there's some of the formats that you will actually start need to consider in remediating your Active Directory to ensure that when you're synchronizing your user accounts up to the cloud, that you actually are enabled to use a supported telephony extension and then that is picked up appropriately. From a carrier perspective, in the UK, as it stands, we have Vodafone from Spain, we've got Vodafone Spain, so it looks like it's Vodafone predominantly, but as I said, this service is slowly rolling out to the globe, so we will start to see some more carriers introduced into the service, and I'm sure they'll make themselves known as and when they do support the service as well. From a voice policy perspective, again, it's a case of using the commands that we are familiar that we already know, so the grant CS and voice policy command. As you can see on the screen there, we're assigning the policy name Vodafone UK to Mark's account, and then secondly we've got the hybrid voice policy being assigned to Mark's account as well. So it's similar commands, it's a case of opening up your remote PowerShell and then performing a similar kind of voice commands to have a look at what the dial plans and voice policies are at the moment. From a number perspective, so this will be one of the most significant aspects for organizations. So that identity, that number that they've grown on and done significant amount of business upon is going to be their go-to number for and is going to be their go-to identity. So Microsoft have recognized this and actually allow you to port up to 999 numbers via the portal. If you do have 1,000 or more numbers that you do need to port, then you can actually create a separate service request and Microsoft will handle that with you on a one-to-one basis, on a one-to-one organizational basis. There are obviously limitations around the numbers that can be transferred, so residential, free phone or DSL numbers. So I'm in Birmingham, so your 0121 addresses definitely won't be being ported to the cloud PBX service. And then optionally, you can actually choose from a range of pooled numbers that Microsoft are making available. So we have actually seen this, and it's a case of going to the Office 365 portal, browsing through the numbers that are available, selecting a single number, selecting a block, selecting an entire range. It will reserve that number for you for 10 minutes whilst you assign that to users or select that number. And then if you don't actually assign that number to your tenant, then it'll be freed back up into the pool for other organizations to use it. From a transferring perspective, I won't spend too much time on this because anybody that has ported numbers in the past will be really familiar with the kind of process that's involved, and they'll also be familiar with the carriers maybe sometimes dragging their heels to get the numbers ported across. But essentially, your account numbers, your billing numbers, your PIN to unblock your number, your carrier name, so the person that's actually hosting the contract in their name, the business address of where the actual telephone line is linked to, because, or believe it or not, in multinational organizations, it is a very difficult task to get some of this information put together. So we definitely recommend that if you are going to be looking at transferring your numbers, you kind of look at this information before you start thinking about that process, just to make it sure it's a smooth process for all. And then one of the big things that you can actually do is you can actually declare your transfer date, start time and date. So falling in line with your typical telco providers as they do at the moment, Microsoft are allowing you to control this in a structured manner and not create chaos by just porting numbers out over as and when administrators feel to. In terms of assigning the numbers, it's a case of, again, opening up your remote PowerShell or using the actual Office 365 portal. So if we all love to use a bit of PowerShell. So if you are going to do that, then you can see the command on the screen at the moment. Now, it is critical that when you are enabling users for Cloud PBX, that you actually specify the location for these users as well as the addresses. And those are going to actually be used in emergency services type scenarios. So when you actually come to assign a number to a user, you will actually need to assign an emergency address to the user as well, assuming that user's got an E5 license assigned to their user account. So in terms of the IP phones that are supported, so whilst as it stands, the Polycom VVX series running firmware 5.3 are going to be the supported devices, although news on the grapevine is that this Polycom CX600s, because of their better together support and the USB tethering better together kind of functionality, they are going to be a supported device at a later date as well. Word is still out on the things like the 500s, etc. But any USB devices will be supported as well, so that's less of a concern for you guys. The default codecs, G722, G729, and again, because Better Together is not enabled by default with certain phones, you may need to do additional administration work via PowerShell. So from a costing perspective, again, because of the kind of reach and the potential reach that we've got on this service, I won't spend too much time on this because it's going to be specific to each region. But you can see that one go-to market to license your users to actually obtain this functionality is to use the Enterprise 5 license, the E5 license. So as you can see on the screen, it's $32 per month. And then on top of the E5 license, you assign the user a calling plan. So does that user need national calling rights? Does that user need international calling rights? And assign them the appropriate calling plan from there. And then you can see the total commitment per user per year on screen there as well. There are additional ways to get this. So if you're not licensed for E5, and let's assume that you've got E1 or even E3 as it goes, then what you can do is actually obtain the Cloud PBX subscription license, and then again, assign a national or international calling plan to the user. Now you might be questioning yourself and the fact that it's actually cheaper to go E1 and E3, but let's not forget that the actual value that E5 brings. So with E5, you're going to be getting the new e-discovery functionality. There's going to be a lot more functionality that E5 offers. So it's not just the Cloud PBX side of things. So that difference in cost is outweighed in the scope of business perspective, but it takes the bigger picture just to understand where the numbers are coming from. From an allowance perspective, so for each user that's assigned the Cloud PBX license, you will get 3,000 national minutes pulled at the user or 600 international minutes. They're pulled at the tenant level. So as you can see, a quick formula run there, if we've got 10 users, each have got 3,000 minutes, then we get 30,000 minutes pulled at the tenant level. So those 3,000 minutes aren't per user. All of the users can collectively use them from the bank. And then from that point there, they're good to go. And if the minutes do run out, then you will hit the 100%, and they do hit the 100% mark, Then, unfortunately, only emergency calls will be accepted and any non-emergency calls will be rejected in that instance. But because it's still early days around this, we will keep you updated on in regards to some of the information and what will happen when these kind of things go to market. Again, from a getting ready perspective, there are several tasks that you kind of need to consider. So if you are looking at Cloud PBX with PSTN calling, then things like single sign-on, Active Directory Connect, AAD Sync and ADFS are considerations. Now, if you are going to be looking at the Cloud PBX with on-premise functionality, then there are additional requirements around that, which we'll touch on to in a second. But essentially, with any deployment, and that this stands for Enterprise Voice on-premise or Enterprise Voice in the cloud, assessing your network and investing in the required areas is a mandatory task. If we are going to invest heavily in servers, invest in the user account, invest in the user training, but then day one we come to deliver the solution and then users can't make a call because of, I don't know, round trip time between two locations that could have been highlighted before we implemented the solution, then we are at fault. So assessing those areas, so your Wi-Fi, quality of service, is your actual hardware up to scratch? So a lot of customers tend to try and get away with quad core servers for their virtual machines, etc. Now, obviously online, that's less of a requirement, but then that's still applicable for your client machines. So if you're going to accept HD video, or if you're going to want to run the Skype for Business client, then please do go onto the TechNet and understand the system requirements for that client before doing so. Bandwidth consumption is priority 1.1, so it's equal. It's as equal with anything. So Microsoft have also released the Skype for Business online bandwidth calculator now, so you can actually use some of the tools that they've produced to estimate your bandwidth and then make the logical assessments around that as well. So it's not going to give you a hard and fast rule. It will actually look at what you're going to use, look at what the information that you've given it, and based on the information that you've given it, it will tell you whether your links are ready in terms of the bandwidth that's assigned. But it won't actually go in and check things like round trip time. It won't check for jitter, packet loss or latency or any of those things. So we strongly do recommend that you do carry out a network assessment on your LAN and WAN networks in once Quasar and things like that have been implemented. If you're going to use this, then again, as it says on the slide, make sure that you're using supported and certified hardware. So Microsoft have got the Open Interoperability Program and the Devices and Solutions Catalog that we strongly recommend that you obtain Skype certified devices before carrying out this kind of functionality. It just means that the end user experience is, we can meet the end user experience and we can also meet expectations. And then finally, it's a final point on the slide, but it equally could have gone at the start of the deck. Express Route. So Office 365 Express Route has been announced as of late, and that basically is a private connection from your data center into the Office 365 data centers. So in the past, with Office 365, one of the common complaints is that users are not getting the best experience using Skype for Business because audio and video is traversing the internet, and the internet, WWW, World Wide West, it just doesn't meet your expectations kind of thing. We can't guarantee quality of service, we can't guarantee round trip time, etc. So with the Express Route, we can now actually implement a managed connection between your data center and Office 365, and over that connection we can actually guarantee quality of service, we can actually guarantee the network characteristics that we need to make a successful enterprise voice call. Again, and continuing getting ready. So with regards to the kind of on-premise infrastructure, if you are going to adopt a Cloud PBX with on-premise PSTN connectivity, leveraging an existing Skype deployment, then you do actually need Skype for Business as your front-end pool for the next hot pool that your Link 2013 or Skype for Business Edge servers will talk to. So in summary, Skype for Business Edge or Link 2013 Edge servers, but we must have a Skype for Business front-end pool that the Edge servers see as their next hot server. And then if you don't actually have any Skype for Business on-premise as it stands, then what Microsoft have actually produced is something that we call the Cloud Connector Edition. And this is free virtual machines that are provisioned on your network. And effectively, they implement that hybrid scenario for you. So if you implement a session border controller, or if you're using a supported IP PBX that's listed on the Open Interoperability Program, then there's the potential for your mediation server to talk directly to that PBX. But more likely than not, we would recommend that you implement the session border controller that can kind of facilitate that media traversal and the signaling traversal between two estates. But just to talk a little bit more about Cloud Connector. So as I said, it's three separate virtual machines that are provisioned onto your network. It consists of a central management server, a mediation server, and an edge server. Now, your CMS and mediation server can actually be co-located on the same physical host, although because of the nature of the edge server, it is required that that's on a separate physical host. PowerShell scripts are used to deploy the servers. Again, small information is available around these scripts at the moment, but as and when these kind of things are publicly available, you can rest assured that we'll get a follow-up session around that just to discuss kind of things and how you go to market and how you deploy those kind of things. Now, there are several limitations around this, so it is important that you understand the limitations, but from a requirement perspective, if you're using a non-microsoft.com domain at the moment for your 365 tenant, then that's not going to be supported. We need to add a new vanity domain and verify that as you would do with your own identity and domain as it stands at the moment. Firewall ports 443, 5061 and 3478 need to be allowed inbound and outbound to each of the specific services. We need, as we do with an on-premise deployment, we need an internal CA for the CMS mediation and the internal edge server certificate role. And then we also need the public CA for your external edge certificate, as we would do with an on-premise deployment as it stands. The three separate DNS records that are required in the public zone, they are ap.yoursipdomain.com, dpsipdomain.com, and mr.sipdomain.com, and they will point to your access edge, media relay, and web conferencing edge accordingly. And then you'll also need three public IP addresses to go along with those as well. And if you are looking at things like single sign-on, etc., then you do need to consider ADFS, ADFS proxies, and your AAD sync as a form of getting your directory synchronized to the cloud as well. As I said, there are some limitations. So by default, they support each Cloud Connector Edition appliance and mediation server will actually support up to 150 cores, although it is possible to pull the Cloud Connector Editions if you want to increase the capacity of that amount of cores, which is really useful. Again, there's no real hard limits around it because documentation, this is new technology, so documentation is not quite available for it at the moment, but again, we'll make sure we update you up in a follow-up show. But as you can see there, some of the functionality that's not supported, and I'll call out some of the major ones, so things like media bypass, response groups, call via work, integration with your trusted applications or VTCs. There's no private line, there's no voice resiliency. So you can see it's still early days that this solution has been placed to market. But the one thing that's important is that Microsoft are considering all customers. So if you don't have Skype for Business at the moment, then this is the way to go. If you do have Skype for Business at the moment, then implement a hybrid scenario. And if you don't want to leverage any of your existing hardware on-premise, or you're ready to just make that switch to the cloud, then Cloud PBX with PSTN calling would definitely be the way to go for you. And again, in terms of the use cases, so if you're looking at a quick and easy way to get to market, then for, let's say, 10 or 30 users, then the Cloud PBX is a perfect service for you. Now, assuming it's available in your location, then it literally requires licensing, assign the users the numbers, or port your existing numbers across, and away you go. The larger enterprises that have workers that are working from everywhere, again, Cloud Office 365 is available from everywhere. So regardless of where I am, as long as I have an internet connection, I'm also supported for telephony as well. And that kind of draws us to, so that's a quick introduction into the Cloud PBX with PSTN calling and or on-premise PSTN connectivity. So I did just want to summarize it for you quickly. So we have three go-to-market efforts. We have the Cloud PBX with PSTN calling. We have Cloud PBX with on-premise on-premise Skype for Business, which in that scenario we call hybrid voice. And then we also have Cloud PBX with no on-premise Skype for Business. And in that instance, we revert to the Cloud Connector Edition to implement that hybrid scenario. So just on that note there, I'll hand over to Anthony Carrigal, who will be talking about Edge Media support. So thank you for all the time and I hope you enjoyed that session. I did just want to point out as well that we are using the Yammer network for Q&A. So if you do have any questions, then please feel free to post those in there and we'll get those assigned to you. We'll get those answered for you as quick as possible. Thank you.
All right, thank you. My name is Anthony Carrigal. I am a Skype for Business MVP, now in Office Server and Services MVP. We've been rebranded a bit and kind of collaborated or combined with some other groups. I'm going to talk about Edge Media today. I'm going to talk a little bit about ICE, Stun, and Turn. I'm going to talk about some different media flows and some different paths that the media can take. We're not going to go too deep just because of the amount of time we have today. We want to kind of give you an intro. We see a lot of questions around this on the TechNet forums, and we see a lot of people kind of misunderstanding how it works. So I wanted to kind of walk through some examples. Right off the bat, Edge Server Overview. I'm guessing if you're signed into this this broadcast that you pretty much know what an Edge Server is. But to cover it briefly, it's a specialized role that sits in two perimeter networks. You see twos underlined there. Two being that you don't want to put this on a single subnet. You don't want to have two NICs in a single subnet. It's not a supported configuration. And we see a lot of people getting that wrong. You can get it to work, but it is not a supported configuration. So that's why we have the two underlined there. Perimeter should probably also be underlined. That's more my thing. You'll see in some of the diagrams, the Edge Server should really be in two perimeter networks, or two DMZs, if you will. One that communicates with the internet that's firewalled, and another one that communicates with the internal network that's also firewalled from the internal network. A lot of people like to take one of those legs and put it on the inside network. I personally don't like that because it does become a path around the firewall. But it is a supported configuration, and again, that one will work as well. But the Edge Server just basically allows hybridization with Office 365, federated chat with people outside of your organization who have their own Link or Skype for Business deployments, and just communications with your outside users. And in general, it allows communication with clients and servers that can't directly communicate otherwise. One of the difficulties when communicating, and one of the problems the Edge Server solves, is sending these communications through NAT. When you're looking at these real-time, these voice, audio, video, desktop sharing type of communications, the media stream and the SIP signaling stream can actually take different paths. So the SIP signaling stream, you typically see that hit the front-end server, but the media stream can take any number of paths, and we'll discuss that in a bit. But getting around that can be a little bit tricky without something like an Edge Server, because when we have that separate stream for the media, that different path for the media, we have to tell the other client, the other endpoint, what path to take, what IP address to communicate with. And we put that IP address inside the message or the data portion of the packet. And if you're just sending that out through a simple firewall, that firewall is going to modify the IP address in the header of the packet, but it's not going to be typically going deeper into the packet and altering the message portion of the packet. Some firewalls can kind of do that, but you don't want to be messing with that with Skype for Business. So to communicate, to kind of get around that problem, we deploy our Edge Server role. And our Edge Server is also, we're really an ICE server. ICE is an interactive connectivity establishment. And that's basically a protocol that just allows NAT traversal. And it makes use of the stun and turn protocols. So when somebody says the ICE server and they're talking about Skype for Business, they mean your Edge Server. Stun is one tool that we can use to get through this NAT situation when we're behind a NAT. Stun is Session Traversal Utilities for NAT, and that's basically a tool or a method for the client to figure out what my NATed IP address is. So let's say I'm using a soft client, or I'm using a desk phone, and I've got my IP address, and maybe that's a 192.168. Something something. That IP address isn't going to work on the internet. To communicate over the internet, I need to know what my address is after I've been NATed, after that network translation the firewall is going to do for me, so I can tell the other endpoint, hey, here's where you need to be sending your media. And that's what Stun is. That helps it figure that out, figure out what port it's using and what IP address to use. When that's not available, maybe that communication is blocked by a firewall, we've also got Turn. And Turn is traversal using relay NAT. And the relay is kind of is a very important word in that description there. That's what it sounds like. It's a relay or it's a proxy. And that's your AV edge role. That's the NAT address that you assign to the, or your NAT address that in the topology builder you assign to that AV edge role, that the edge becomes a media relay. It's all your media will be hairpinned, or rather sent through that Edge Server to the clients. So the way this all kind of comes together is when we're setting up our session, our clients are setting up their sessions, they're sending out a candidate list in the SIP packets. That candidate list has local candidates, STUN candidates, and TURN candidates. Local candidates, again, are the IP address on my workstation or my phone, because we're gonna try to directly connect first. If we can directly communicate, we don't need any NAT or we're not having any troubles, we won't need to use STUN or TURN. We're also gonna offer STUN, which is the NAT, as we discussed, for the client itself. If we're going right out to the firewall, those ports are open directly out from through the firewall from my client. We'll use that. And then TURN, if those options don't work, we can use the AV Edge and force all the traffic through that AV Edge role with TURN. All the candidates will be tried at once. The remote endpoint that we're communicating with, we'll try those different endpoints together. But it will prioritize local over STUN and STUN over TURN. So I wanted to take a little bit and kind of explain that or show that through some examples. Hopefully we can make it a little more clear, as well as talk about some other things that will hopefully clear this up. What I've got here is a diagram of a direct connection. So these are two internally homed clients. What I mean by internally homed is their home is on a front-end server or pools that are within the internal network. And these two users are also within the internal network. They start a peer-to-peer audio or video chat, maybe both. The SIP signaling is always going to bounce off the front-end server. The reason it's going to go through the front-end server is that signaling, that invite, needs to be offered to multiple clients. So you might not just be logged in with your soft client, you might be logged in with a phone, you might have your mobile client, which is connected through the edge, or rather through your web proxy, your reverse proxy. There may be different endpoints out there. So we're gonna send that signaling to the front end so we can make sure that it's offered to those different clients so that you can accept on multiple endpoints. And also so we can log into the monitoring and the archiving databases, our call detail records. But when that's set up, the candidate list, when we get that session set up, that's gonna allow the media to flow directly between these two. Now, in this case, we're using the local candidate in this diagram because the two users, maybe they're on the same subnet or they're on subnets that have no firewalling between each other. They can route directly between each other. That media is going to go directly between the endpoints. It's not going to use up any bandwidth or extra resources on the front end server. And that's typically almost always the case with internal communications, with the exception of conferencing. If this were two people in a meet now or more than two in a meet now or a scheduled meeting, then that traffic, that media traffic would also flow through the front end where it can be multiplexed and sent back out to each endpoint. Another question that's come up a lot and kind of when we're talking about cloud PBX, this is the externally owned example. Same example, the users are on the internal subnets, but now we're using cloud PBX. We don't have that local front end server. Our users are homed in our cloud PBX environment. The signaling still goes off as 365, but if I'm picking up the phone and I'm calling somebody in a branch office or I'm calling somebody who's just sitting a few offices away, the media, that phone call stays locally. There's no reason to send it up over the internet and pull it right back down over the internet to call somebody a few feet away. That all stays local as long as it's not a conference. So another thing we wanted to clear up. But let's talk about STUN right now. Let's say we've got an internal user and an external user. We know we can't establish that locally because the external user has no idea or is just not permitted through the firewall to directly communicate with my client. So with the STUN, I'm able to determine my NAT. I can send that as a candidate list. The person on the other end, maybe they're using a simple Wi-Fi router or something that makes it easy to kind of get through. We can determine our NAT. The ports aren't blocked between the devices. Maybe we have allow any outbound towards the internet on both sides. And we can create that direct media connection. In this case, the signaling is going through the front end, through the edge to the other guy, but the media we can still send directly to from endpoint to endpoint, and that's STUN. With TURN, that's a case where, again, it's the same situation. We've got an internal user, an external user, but maybe our firewall blocks the ports from communicating directly with the internet. Maybe we only have web access out through the internet. For whatever reason, I cannot directly communicate with that external user, then we're going to use TURN and send that through that edge server and relay that through the edge server, and that's going to make sure this works. Now, this isn't something you really have to go deep into and configure. It all just kind of works like magic. But when you're troubleshooting this and you're going through these candidate lists, you're trying to figure out why media is not flowing, it's a good thing to know. One thing I'd like to point out in this diagram before I move on is you'll see the media traffic is going directly from the internal endpoint to the internal edge interface. That's something a lot of people miss. When they open up the firewall ports for their edge servers, and Technic can be a little confusing about this, they're opening up the ports from the front end servers or other links, internal link servers to their internal edge interface, but they're not opening up the workstation subnets or the phone subnets to the internal edge interface. And you need to make sure your clients can communicate with that internal edge interface on TCP 443 and UDP 3478 for STUN. And for these communications, these protocols, so that we can communicate with the edge server, and so this will work. Another thing before I forget, I wanted to thank these slides. I'm using Randy Chapman's stencils that I pulled from the TechNet gallery. So if you're out there, Randy, thank you for those. They help us all a lot. Externally, we've got another example here. We've got two guys that are just external. Maybe they're remote users. A couple of our guys just out in the field. When they communicate to each other, they may be behind NAT. If so, they can use that STUN. They can use STUN just the same way we use internal external, because they can directly communicate with them again behind simple Wi-Fi routers. Or maybe they're even, you know, in the same hotel. If they're in the same hotel and they can directly connect, that media may just never leave the hotel. It may stay on that internal network there. If we can't make that connection, again, ports are blocked. We're only allowing web access. That's when TURN comes in, and we can use TURN to facilitate that communication as well. It's kind of interesting, and it's worth cracking open your snooper, and your different tools, Wireshark even, to kind of watch how this all goes together. One of my last slides, one of my last slides here. I really just threw in there, not because involves any kind of internal or external configuration, but just because a lot of people aren't aware of it. And it's an interesting one. So when we think of using the edge server, we typically think about using or allowing access with external parties. But there are situations where we can allow access with internal parties as well, or people that we just can't directly communicate with, as I mentioned on one of my first slides. So let's say we have two subnets. We've got subnet A and subnet B. The front end servers may be in another subnet. Subnet A and B can both talk to the server subnet, but they're not allowed to talk to each other. Maybe one's a VPN network, it's firewalled from other workstation subnets. Whatever reason, these two subnets are firewalled from each other for security purposes. We can still enable communications, media communications, through them, through the edge. We can actually still bounce those communications off of the edge server, the internal edge server interface, using all these same protocols. So even when connections are blocked, media still has the ability to flow. With that, I'm going to just go ahead and say thank you. Turn it back over to Mark and Corey, and I'll try to stick around if there's questions or anything like that.
So session three is adoption strategies. And it's often a hard thing for us deployment consultants to do, or to get involved with, rather. And that's simply because when we talk to customers and we go through the design plan, deploy, test phase, and they see our quotations and they try and make savings, adoption and training is usually the first thing that gets cut from the deployment. So adoption is really for the end users, IT team, to work through, and we can help with that and provide them advice and what have you. So before we talk about adoption and how to get users to really pick up Skype for Business tools and really use them to the full extent, we need to know how we can measure adoption. And it's quite a hard topic or subject to measure, but some of the ideas or some of the measurements that we come up with is measured on the amount of service tickets that are raised by your end users to your IT support portal, the amount of complaints you receive, whether that's verbally, or even passing comments that aren't particularly to you or directed to you, but you might be walking down the hall to your office and might hear a couple of people speak and talk about Skype for Business and say, I wish it could do this and I wish it could do dialing conferencing, for instance, and you know that it does, but perhaps they haven't received that message. any feedback, so users can feed that information back to you, again, through service tickets, through maybe the internet, things like Yammer, instant message, and that sort of thing. And the other message, or the other adoption measure is making sure your users actually using the right tools for the right job. So I remember when I worked in a previous company, we deployed Skype for Business with enterprise voice and dialing conferencing, but the sales team was still spinning up Conference Genie PSTN conferences to the customers, and we were like, well, why aren't you using Skype for Business, or the link as it were, solution that we've got in place. So it's things like that you can use to measure how successful your adoption strategy is. Adoption in old money terms, the old way of deploying stuff, or link Skype for Business, is to design it yourself within your IT team, deploy it, think you get it right, and then Monday morning you say, this system's going live, so I'll send out an email to my user base and tell them that as from Monday morning 9 o'clock, you're not going to use your Cisco or Avaya legacy PBX system, you're going to use Skype for Business, and here's a nice new headset. And then you sort of lock your doors in your IT office, and you sit behind your service desk and troubleshoot the support tickets when all hell breaks loose and people don't know how to use it. Your mentality is that there's no consideration to training, or maybe you spend 5 minutes training people and they tell them to adopt the you'll get used to it approach. So all that leads up to frustrated users and frustrated bosses, and it's disruptive business to everyone, and that ultimately leads to maybe your P45 in or getting fired in the worst cases. So adoption begins, I mean, it really begins before anything else. So before you start to deploy, before you start to think about Skype for Business in your environment, really think about how your users are going to use it, so how the business is going to use it, so what it can bring, what additional features it brings that your legacy PBX system can't already provide, how are you going to roll it out, how are you going to interoperate in during the migration period. All these considerations need to be done before you start installing media and getting on with things. So plan your adoption strategy, and really walk a mile in your end user's shoes. And what I mean by that is go and visit them, see what the day-to-day tasks are, see what they ask them, what they find is good about their current system, what's bad, ask them for ideas of what could be better, and use that information to plan your deployment for Skype for Business. Also use this time as you're walking around different departments and speaking to different people, you'll naturally find that there's more people interested in it than others. So some people just say, I don't care, I just want to make a phone call, while other people think, well, this is really cool because I can instant message, I can make a phone call, I can do conferencing, I can do low-level remotes, present my screen, present a PowerPoint, I can do all that multimedia and rich content I can do from one pane of glass, from one client. It's absolutely great, and it follows me. So those people, the ones that you want to champion and you want to get hold of and really get friendly with them, because those guys are going to be your friends in the field, so to speak, as you come to deploy. So you can use them, those people, when you come to your proof of concept, when you come to your general availability, as key colleagues and persons to go to before they come to you. So you might have one in every team. Or one in every floor, and they can certainly help more novice users or people who can't grasp the full functionality. So like I said, adoption is everything. So it comes from designing your solution to the end user spec. So if you don't design your solution to meet your end user needs, so if they say, you know, five things that are really good about my PBX, I can make a phone call, I can sign out on my phone, I can change my presence status so I don't receive a phone call during things. during presentations, etc. But I really would like the feature to do web conferencing. I really would like the feature to send an instant message, and I would want my number, my DDI, my personal identity on the PSTN to follow me anywhere. So I could be in the office, the head office on a Monday, I could be in a branch site on a Tuesday, or I could be in the car on a Wednesday going to a customer site. And you can use that information to make sure that you've hit dining conferencing, web conferencing, and external access, and mobile apps and such like. Make sure, like Corey said, that your network is sufficiently capable of supporting the extra real-time packets and the workloads that's going to generate. Traditionally, legacy PBX systems, they tend to, in the UK especially, they tend to be separate systems that run on separate copper, separate hardware, separate switches, etc. And it's all sort of isolated away from the main computer network or the data network. Skype for Business runs on your data network. So whilst you might think that your legacy PBX is fine, I have no issues with quality, just bear in mind that we actually might be using a different infrastructure for Skype for Business, and that really should be checked out through network assessments and simulation and what have you. Size your hardware accordingly. Make sure it's 2-spec, 2-technet. It's often one of the biggest questions, or the most asked questions that I get asked, is that do I really have to have a front-end server with 32 gig of RAM and 2 hex core processors? It's a really big server, but I only have 100 users. Microsoft has addressed this recently, and there is a tool out there that will give you a basic calculation of what specification you really need, but servers are relatively cheap these days. I highly recommend that you use the standard specs from TechNet, and physical servers as opposed to virtual servers for your front ends and mediation servers especially. And the one thing to make perfectly clear is that if you're going to choose virtual, you're going to choose a physical hardware for a front end server, then all front end servers must be physical, but all front end servers must be virtual, and the same for edges and other roles, etc. Don't be tempted to cut short and cut corners. Purchase the correct devices, make sure they have the right webcams, make sure they have the right headsets, the right phones, etc. Set yourself sensible deadlines. It's often hard in an IT world to say, well, actually a deployment is 3 months away or 6 months away or even 12 months away. Usually people want it and they want it tomorrow. Been in several businesses in the past where a director's come down on a Friday evening and said, I want Link installed and I want it available for Monday morning. And obviously that's not reasonable time frame to set, and you're going to lead yourself into trouble. So if you ignore any of these, then your adoption is doomed to failure, because you could do all the best training in the world to your end users and have the best relationship with end users, but if your infrastructure cannot support your user workloads, then people aren't going to use the system. They're going to complain, and we're going to go back to square one, to the drawing board, to a new solution. So the steps to success, really, as I alluded to, is to prepare for your deployment, profile your users. Are they road warriors? Are they information workers? Are they executives? Well, if they're road warriors, then perhaps a desk phone is not going to be the ideal solution for them. A Bluetooth earpiece, perhaps. A mobile app is obviously going to be a requirement. For information workers, they could potentially have a high quality Bluetooth headset, such as Plantronics UC Focus Voyager UC, or wired headsets in a call center scenario, double headsets, double ear headsets, etc. Keep your business goals at the forefront of your design, so don't be tempted to include items or roles and features of what Skype for Business can do just because it can do it. Keep it specific to your deployment and to your requirements. If you don't need it, don't deploy it. You're wasting resources and you're wasting time, and you're leaving yourself open for users to potentially use that service that you're not geared up for. Use the awareness material. You can design your own to help you market your deployment to your users. So use Microsoft tools such as the RASC, the Rollout Adoption Success Toolkit, and the client awareness, Skype Business Client Awareness Pack, which you can download from Microsoft. And they include some quick reference cards, some flyers, some email templates that you can send out at key stages of your deployment and your design and planning phase to make users really aware of what's happening and what changes are coming. If you have interactive TVs around the office, you can set up PowerPoint shows on that just in public areas. Just people might not spend too long looking at them, but if they see it coming in their peripheral vision, and the more you do that and the more visibility you give to users, the more aware they're going to be of things are changing and less caught out they're going to be and so on. Create a feedback solution. So when you deploy your proof of concept, perhaps, or you're doing a test, or even in the short stages or the early stages of your full deployment, create a feedback solution to allow your users to talk to you. Now, what I find is anonymous feedback is best, because when people talk to you face to face or via instant message, if you ask them a direct question, they tend to just tell you what you want to hear unless they have got, you know, the courage to tell you otherwise. So if you give them an option to say, actually, here's a form you can fill out, stick it in a box, or send an email to, not an email, just fill out this form on SharePoint or what have you. You don't have to include your name, you can if you want. You'll find people be more honest, and you might find that they will open up to you more easily. But don't use this information, don't feel as it's a personal impact to you or a personal dig at you. Use the information positively to rectify the pain points that they're experiencing, and ultimately you will make a better solution. Proof of concept is really important for any deployment. You can't just turn it on one day and expect it to work. So I prefer to use a two-stage deployment, and sort of loosely following the way that Microsoft have released Cloud PBX, and that it's been in evaluation for a while and it went to public preview and now it's gone to general availability. So your proof of concept should be an evaluation and then a preview after your evaluation period. During your evaluation period, really you want to have users who are semi-proficient in IT and maybe some technical people as well. Users that you really can interrogate and quiz them for feedback, and who are going to use the system. Those users that you identified back when you were wandering around the offices asking questions, get them involved. They're going to tell you whether it's fit for this purpose for their department or whether it's not. After you think you've got your 90% of your solutions sorted and it's all working as you expected, move it to a preview. And a preview, you open it out to more people, more semi-proficient people, more novices, because the solution is only going to be as good as your worst employee, as it were. Get them involved. I know it's easy to avoid it and say, you know, they'll just get used to they're just one person in a big pond. But essentially, if you can win them over, the rest of the people in your organization, it will be easy. So the secret sauce for a successful adoption, really, and it's high risk, or it can be seen as a high risk strategy, is to involve your senior management and directorship into your preview proof of concept. Now you might think, well, actually, I don't want them involved until I'm absolutely 100% sorted and ready and confident that this solution will work. But get them involved early, talk to them, surround them, just involve them, get them to use it. You'll find that if they will fall in love with Skype for Business, and they'll think, wow, it's amazing, I've got a whole new collaboration platform I never knew was possible. And they will naturally drive adoption for you. So if it comes down from the top, people generally have no choice but to use it. So use that power to your advantage. Set reasonable goals for your proof of concepts. They can't be done in a week. They can't be done in a few days. A reasonable time frame is going to be around about 60 days, 2 months for each POC. So you're looking about 4 months really as a bare minimum before you can be confident and you've done all your due diligence, all your proactive repairs and whatnot. and get yourself really comfortable with the system and that you guys are ready to not only support the system, you're comfortable to administer it, you're comfortable to answer key questions from your employees and your customers, as it were. But stick to your design at all stages. You know, you could find that during your walk around, you find like a secretary uses a fax system that the company pays an extortionate amount of money for, and they send one fax a month. Well, really, you know, I don't really want to include that and spend money on fax modules for my SBCs. I can provide that functionality outside of Skype for Business through eFax or some other subscribe to service. Listen to your users, be a face to a name, go and visit them. Make sure that when they come to you with a problem, you act on it. You don't just bury it into the never to be to be looked at again pile. And don't be afraid to hold your hands up and say, hey, I got it wrong. I actually need to revisit this and make a slight change to the way I was going to deploy this because I haven't thought of this process. But all of this will come out through your proof of concept. But really, it's about being a person. So me personally, I find it hard to talk to people because I work within the IT. I spend most of my time on instant messaging, most of my time on Twitter, most of my time on email. I very rarely talk to a person face to face. So it's really about getting out of there. And that's one of the reasons why I'm doing this show, to try and improve myself, my presentation skills, etc. But you can use that to go in and talk to your customers. Teach your users. So during your deployment and your proof of concept, make sure you have training sessions and have regular training sessions as well. Don't just do a one-hit wonder approach. Say, well, I've trained you for half an hour on 20 days ago, but I now need you to make a click-to-call telephone call. People aren't going to remember that, so make sure that you offer regular training. Not everybody might be able to attend the first training event. And reach out and visit departments. Essentially, it's just that communication aspect of things, making sure that you're visible to the users, make sure they're talking to you, and you will find out a lot more that way than if you just designed the solution for yourself. And after you've deployed, it doesn't just end after you reach general availability. It's an ongoing process. So again, it doesn't have to be very regularly, but keep in touch, passing comments, use your QoE reporting and be proactive in terms of monitoring and seeing, well, actually a user is very quiet. They might be putting up and shutting up, but I can see that they've got the wrong device because it's given a lot of, the MOS score is very high. It's like, oh, very low rather, sorry, it's like one or something like that, and needs to be in the four. So maybe I need to reissue them with a better device for what they're doing. So back in the day when you did a profile on that user, they could have been a road warrior, but they could have changed positions, which meant they were more office-based than they could do with a better quality headset, for instance. And use this information that you get from your user base, from your service tickets, from your comments, etc. Use it to improve your system. So you've deployed Skype for Business, you've got Enterprise Voice or whatever modalities you choose to deploy, but it just doesn't stop there. It's an evolving system. There's new features coming out from Microsoft, so you can evaluate with the broadcast meetings, for instance, would be beneficial to you, to your business, and you can put those feelers out there to your user groups, etc., to see whether actually it would get used. So again, what is a successful adoption really? It's all about communication, like I've sort of hammered home throughout this presentation. It's having the right tools for the right jobs in the right hands. Adoption is when you can come into work, you can, with a smile, you don't have to walk in through the back door, you can walk in through the front door for once and say hi and wave and, you know, have a laugh and sit in your chair and slouch and think, actually, do you know what? I've done a good job here. Usually what I find is that when nobody speaks to you or nobody calls you, you're usually doing a good job. People only tend to call you when you've got a problem or something's not working. And that really draws a close to the Skype show, as it were. There's a few closing slides that we've got to go through. Just information, we hope you've enjoyed it. And big thanks to Corey and Anthony for dropping on this. The sessions were excellent. What way to say that we're not just here for ourselves, like we want to be involved in the community, and we actively promote other communities, community leaders, community shows, etc. Like I say, we're part of a very strong community. So we've got the UC Architects, who are a great bunch of guys who do Exchange and Skype for Business podcasts regularly. You can download them, go to the ucarchitects.com. Really cool guys. Some MVPs in there as well. UC Day is the UK's leading independent UC Expo at the moment, and it's run by Jason Wynn, Andrew Price, and I forget the other guy, apologies. But they put on a show late in the year, I think it's about 24th of October this year, down in Birmingham, where they have leading vendors and people like, other MVPs. I think we had Lassie Wido and a few other people that were there this year. And really want to give a shout out for the Skype for B recap. I think I owe this to Josh because he's been screaming about my show for the last few months. So look him up. He does a weekly show, 15 minutes, just talks about what's been happening in the Skype for Business world for the last week. He's got a YouTube channel. Just search for Get-CS Josh on YouTube and you'll see all his shows. I think he's got about 10 or 11 at the moment. So really cool, quick access to resources. And obviously we've got so many community blogs out there, too many to mention. Next Hop is back. Technoforums is always a great place to be. So just reach out to any of us and we'll be happy to help you guys. So coming up for the next show, it's going to be the 1st of February 2016 at 7 p.m. UK time. And our special guest for that show is going to be Matt Landis, who's going to be talking about hopefully his Cepha Util Community Edition, which will be pretty cool. I hope you join us for that. So with that said, we're going to go into session 4 Q&A. So again, use Yammer to post some questions or reach out through his IM or email to mark@theskypeshow.com or corey@theskypeshow.com. We're going to be online for about 15-20 minutes now with Anthony and we'll answer your questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Question on Yammer from Alexandru Inican. Apologies if I pronounced your surname incorrectly. Is there any other way to ensure quality of service outside an MPLS network over the internet? And the answer to that really is no. If you haven't got a managed network, which an MPLS is, you've got no way of guaranteeing the quality of service from the minute your packets exit your network onto the public internet. We just can't manage it. If you want to guarantee quality of service, then you really need an MPLS network, express route to the Microsoft Global Delivery Network. Or you just have to admit that you can't guarantee quality of service outside your network.
So we've had a second question come through from Alexandru Inican, and again, sorry for any pronunciation on the name, but the second question was, how come Skype does better, or subjectively seems to do better than Skype for Business in many internet scenarios? And that's based on audio quality. So the response that we would have for that is, I mean, first and foremost, the internet is that unmanaged network. So if you actually collectively tested a decent amount of calls to grab a significant sample, that you probably would find that Skype actually does act in the same way that Skype for Business. But then to take that one step further, the actual Skype for Business client has now had the Silk codec introduced to it. So that's the Silk codec. So the Silk codec was something that was found in the Skype consumer client that passed its way across to the Skype for Business client. And that Silk codec actually is only supported in Skype for Business calls. So if Skype for Business, for example, was talking across the internet to a Link 2013 client, then we are still going to be using legacy codecs, so RT Audio, etc. So we are going to be subject to, in some instances, well, it's a core quality. But what I would suggest is, as you've rightfully said in your brackets, it's very subjective. So whenever you're going over the internet, we can't really manage any of that kind of connectivity. So it would be a difficult test to use. It would be a difficult scenario to grab a base sample from, knowing that it's an unmanaged connection. So I hope that answers your question. A lot of it comes down to the codec and the capabilities of the client. And yeah, we'll get that typed up in the Yammer response for you as well. So thanks again for your second question. We really, really appreciate the participation. So thanks for joining, and for anybody that's still on the broadcast, thanks for hanging around. We're gonna draw an end to the Q&A session now. We've had a couple of questions placed in there. So if you haven't seen those, head over to the Yammer network and have a look at the episode one group. Just want to say again from myself, Mark and Anthony, really thank you for taking the time out of your evenings, your mornings, your afternoon, wherever you're joining from, to taking the time to join us on our session. Hopefully you found all of the sessions useful and been able to grab some new knowledge from those. As Mark said, the next session will be the 1st of February 2016, so feel free to head over to theskypeshow.com to start submitting your ideas for sessions, and then we'll take all of those into account and then get communication out on when the next session show will be. We'll follow up the session now with all of the links to the relative URLs for the video recording, as well as the PowerPoint deck and again, just to summarize on the Yammer group as well. So if you haven't got those just yet, then wait up for those, and we'll have those out to you by sometime tomorrow afternoon. That'll be the 5th of January, 2016. Again, thanks for your time, and we'll see you on the next episode.